We're here with Dylan Avery from Loose Change, and I think just about everybody knows Dylan and knows how dedicated he is to getting the truth out and to really working and very passionately working to fill in as many pieces of the puzzle as he possibly can. Dylan, Barry Jennings died, and I believe it was last September when I had you on the show. We talked about that briefly. We really didn't know too much about it and the circumstances of his death. Of course, he was really a huge piece of this 9/11 truth puzzle. He was ultimately maybe one of the grandest whistleblowers we had, though maybe even he himself didn't know about it. If you could just very briefly, for my listeners, tell them who Barry Jennings was and why his testimony, his eyewitness report, was so important.
Yeah, wow. All right. Well, Barry Jennings was one of the two people that testified to a explosion happening inside World Trade Center Building 7 on September 11th. According to Barry's own testimony to us, this explosion occurred before either of the Twin Towers had fallen. He was very explicit about this, and also stated that he also heard many other explosions happening while he was trapped in the building because the explosion trapped him and the other individual, who I'll get to in a minute. They were trapped in there for several hours, and Barry witnessed firefighters running away two times and coming back a third time, which was in response to both of the collapses. And he was very explicit about these details because I made sure to you know, we were very pressed for time during our interview with him, so I was trying to get information out of him, but also try to not hold him up too much. It was a tough balance. Barry's very important, and I mean, it's not even necessarily in terms of how important he is to the movement. It's, I mean, also in terms of the fact that he was an amazing guy. You know, I only got to know him briefly, but I mean, he was really cool. You know, Jason and I sat in his office and we got to talk to him for a while. You know, he knew about Second Edition. You know, his co-workers had actually brought him in a copy of it. And a couple of his co-workers actually knew who Jason and I were, but they, you know, they had heard of Second Edition. So Barry knew who we were going into the interview, and he knew what our position was. He may not have necessarily known the implications of what he was going to say or, you know, how big it was going to go. But, I mean, we got a 20-minute, unedited, uncut, I would like to think, unguided interview from him. All I tried to do with Barry was just get his testimony and get it in his own words. I wasn't trying to force him down one particular narrative. I was just trying to get things cleared up.
And let me just say this, Dylan. Barry Jennings, for those of you who don't know, he was an eyewitness who was an emergency coordinator for the New York Housing Authority. He had passed away at age 53 here again just recently, and a lot of us were wanting to know why. Barry Jennings was a key 9/11 witness. He was an emergency coordinator for the New York Housing Authority. He passed away recently. There was suspicious air about what had happened to him. There was almost no information coming forward about what had happened to him. He had talked to you guys and had reiterated this exclusive interview. His confusion for the explanation of the World Trade Center 7 collapse. He had heard explosions inside the building, Dylan. He was confused about how this went down in the first place. And here he is, an eyewitness in World Trade Center 7, the biggest mystery, I think, really, in my own mind, about what happened on 9/11. And he met an unfortunate end. We didn't know what happened to him. We're going to update people, but who was Barry Jennings, and why was his testimony so important to 9/11 truth?
Yeah, as I hope it would be pretty clear that Barry's testimony is very important in regards to the record of what happened inside that building, you know, Building 7 that day, because there is very little to work upon. And the other aspect of his interview that I think is probably the most contentious, especially because the BBC seized upon it, was almost, I don't want to say a throwaway remark on his end, but it was definitely something that I'm not really sure why he said it, but he definitely said it. You know, the firefighter, when he took us down, he told us, do not look down. And he gestures with his hand, we were stepping over people. And you know you can feel when you're stepping over people. This is something that, again, he had never been reported before. There were supposedly no casualties inside World Trade Center Building 7. So for Barry to tell us that was interesting. And, I mean, I guess in hindsight, maybe I should have stopped him right there and tried to get him to elaborate. But, you know, I didn't want to interrupt him. I wanted to just let him tell his story. But that's, I think, one of the things about his interview that I don't want to say anything like got him in, you know, necessarily like got him in trouble, but I think that's one of the things about his interview. I mean, like the fact that the BBC seized upon it and then went and interviewed Barry, that's, I guess, the other thing I should segue for your viewers is that after Barry gave us our interview, Jason and I leaked out like 30 seconds or so, and we try to keep all personal details and all the identifying information out of it, just to be like, hey, this is what we have, this is what we're sitting on. We can't say too much, but you know, we just want everyone to know that we have this. But of course, people figured out who he was, and I called him.
Well, it was leaked. It was leaked by 9/11 truthers who had access to, you know, privileged information. You guys did a good job putting him in a silhouette, trying to protect his identity, but it was a big story, and eventually it came out.
And a lot of the bloggers that were like, oh, I mean, that's totally Barry Jennings, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like, they didn't understand the severity of the situation, you know what I'm saying? Like, and again, I understand that, you know, people were excited, you know, they were anxious, like, you know, I can understand that. But, you know, but then again, you know, we probably just shouldn't have said anything at all. But with that being said, after, and again, I take my share of the responsibility too. I'm not blame shifting here. I mean, it, like I said, maybe it shouldn't have been leaked at all. Maybe we should have kept our mouth shut until release. But I guess we felt that we were trying to keep Barry and ourselves safe.
Well, he wanted to talk to you, and I think that's important for our listeners to know. He wanted to talk to you. He felt compelled to share the information, his eyewitness report from Building 7 that day as basically a FEMA operative. And I'm sure, you know, if it was me, couldn't sleep at night without telling somebody exactly what had happened. And that's what he said, you know, that he had heard explosions going off in Building 7, that he was stepping on dead bodies when the mainstream media was reporting there were no bodies in Building 7, other than, I guess, the wreckage of the American Republic. So he wasn't a very important whistleblower. And just to kind of build our case here, Dylan, you know, what kind of a guy was he? What kind of sense did you get from him when you talked to him? I mean, he's gone now, and I hope he can rest in peace. And, of course, you know, we are really, I want to be empathetic and compassionate to the family, because there's a good chance he might have met his end by speaking the truth. But what did you get from him? What kind of a guy was he, and why did you feel he wanted to talk about 9/11 so much?
Well, that's the tragedy of the whole thing, Jack, is what an amazing man Barry was. I mean, he told no lies, you know, Barry was definitely a no-nonsense kind of guy. You know, he shot straight from the hip, you know, he told us his story in his own words, he didn't try to censor himself, he didn't. And not even that, not even in terms of his interview. He was just an amazing man, and all he cared about, you know, the only thing that it's the most important thing that Barry expressed to me was his family and the safety of his family and how important it was that he was, you know, at the time, 3 years away from his retirement, I believe, and that, you know, he was like, listen, I'm going to give you this interview. You can't refer to my job in the movie. You can't refer to where I work at all. And we didn't. I mean, I could show people the rough cut of the final cut where it comes up. It just says Barry Jennings, private citizen, you know, job withheld. You know, we didn't say a thing. We just gave his name. So, I mean, I tried to remain as true to my word as possible. And that brings me to late 2007, August, I believe, is when I called Barry just to check up on him because, you know, the movie was going to be coming out soon and I just wanted to see how he was doing. And, it took him a minute when I first called and introduced myself. It took him a minute to realize who I was. He might have either not, you know, he might have not understood me or, you know, who knows. But, you know, I was like, oh, you know, it's Dylan. He's like, who? I'm like, oh, you know, I'm sorry. I came down a while ago and I interviewed you. And, you know, he's like, oh, okay. You know, and then, you know, he explained to me pretty much, long story short, that, you know, he, from what I can remember, that, you know, he was getting a lot of threats at his job. It's like, you know, pretty much he was worried about losing his job. That was what he expressed to me at the time. So I would only assume that he was getting calls at his job, et cetera, et cetera. Because, you know, it's probably the only way that people were trying to track him down. Who knows? I don't know. So
threats because of what he told you guys and what he went on the record for regarding 9/11, the days of 9/11.
Yeah, repercussions from parts of the interview going out. So, you know, he's like, I really would appreciate it if you could pull my interview because I can't lose my job, man. I got a wife I have to take care of. I have a family. And I gave him my word right then and there. I was like, all right, Barry. You know, I completely respect the sanctity of your family and I don't want to do anything to jeopardize it. So I pulled the interview from the film. And it wasn't until a little bit later that next year, when, or a little bit later on, it's 2008 was a very crazy year for me. You'll have to forgive me. But no, it was in 2008 when the BBC interviewed me and eventually interviewed Barry about his experience inside Building 7. And it was at this point when Barry's testimony and mood seems to have completely changed. Maybe not completely, but, you know, you watch his interview with us and watch his interview with the BBC, and there's definitely two different sides. It's just, it's two different kinds of, you know what I mean? Like, his cadence is different in both ones. Like, he's not telling the same story in both interviews. It's sure. At least that's what it seems to me. And he seems like, and especially when that part comes up in the interview where they, you know, they say, oh, well, did you see dead bodies? Like, no, you know, I didn't see any dead bodies. You know, I said it felt like I was stepping over dead bodies. And it's like, I don't understand. Like, I wasn't trying to, like, misinterpret, but I mean, when you say that it feels like you're stepping over people, it would imply that you were. I don't know. Whatever. It does not matter.
Yeah, I mean, to any reasonable person, it would look like he was pressured into retracting his original truthful statements.
I mean, it's possible. It's very possible. And I guess my main concern here is I don't want to say anything that could be potentially deemed, like, offensive to the family, because, you know, if they do end up listening to this by any chance, I mean, all I want them to know is that, you know, the only thing that I ever tried to preserve and care about was Barry's safety and his family, because I knew what was at stake. So, I mean, you know, if his family's listening, all I can say is that I'm sorry for what happened to him. And, I mean, that it kind of segues into my next part of this interview is that I'm still trying to figure out what the hell happened. As far as I know, he did his BBC interview. That was the end of that. And then, well, it wasn't the end of that, because after his BBC interview, I released the full interview online as a response. I was like, yeah, I can't sit on this anymore. You know, I can't put it in the final cut, but I can't sit on it. It has to go out, especially after the BBC twisted his story the way they did. So, I put it out on Blip. Full thing uncut, you know, people watched it, digested it, and then it was about late August that Jason told Corey and I that Alex was getting calls and emails that Barry died, and I thought it was, like, someone joking around. Like, I thought that either someone was playing prank on us, I thought, like, maybe, like, Troy was up to his old tricks or something, but I guess I didn't want to believe it is the main thing. I really didn't want Barry to be dead. You know, it's the last thing I wanted from day one, man. From day one, that's the last thing I wanted. Let's see here. I'm trying to figure out what the next thing is. I mean, it was YouTube comments that, you know, weirdly enough, that, I mean, I don't want to say confirmed it, but the dates started coming up, of the specific date, August 19th, 2008, that date started popping up on YouTube, comments here and there. And then eventually someone called the housing authority and they confirmed that, you know, that it was true, that he had passed away in August, that he had passed away on August 19th, 2008. That freaked me and Corey out for a while. We weren't really sure what to do.
A 53-year-old man who was relatively healthy, who had no history that we know of, you know, any major health problems, just passes away. There's no explanation. I think this is where, you know, the people were left with as this all happened. We just, and this is kind of what bothered us all, we didn't have any explanation. I mean, here's what is apparently a 9/11, major 9/11 witness who's gone on the record with people I guess he shouldn't be talking to, because God knows we shouldn't talk to the alternative media. And he just passes away at a very young age with no explanation. The mystery involved in this was, if nothing else, compelling. And we want to have closure here, as I'm sure his family wants to have closure. Okay, you've gone back to New York, Dylan, and this is why we have you on today. You've gone back to New York. You've looked into this a little bit more, and you might have at least some clue as to maybe what happened or how the circumstances might have been a little funky. I want you to talk about that. What do we know now?
Well, pretty much, there's one thing that I wanted to bring up before we get into that, is that the only thing that we could gather was that from what we heard, is that he spent a couple days in the hospital and then passed away. And that was pretty much the only thing you could hear. There was no obituaries. There was nothing in the public record at all. There was nothing. And Barry also happened to die the very week that the final NIST report on Building 7 came out. I believe literally 3 days before. I mean, yeah. I may be off by like one or two, but he literally died the week the NIST report comes out and says that, you know, says what it says. You know, I don't need to go into it. And, of course, completely discounting his testimony. And I tried to tell the guys at NIST, and I tried to point them towards the interview that we did with him. Just in terms of full disclosure, I was like, you know, guys, just in terms of your investigation, I figure you might be interested in seeing this footage. So with that being said, I found myself back in New York, you know, this past couple of days, you know, doing some work on some things. And the first thing I decided to do when I got my rental car was drive down to Long Island, because I still had Barry's address from when he gave it to me. You know, he gave me his address to mail him DVD of the interview and stuff, and it was done. So I still had that, and I was like, I have to do this. You know, I have a car, I have a couple hours, I need to drive to his house and just see for myself. So it was about an hour from Manhattan. You know, I had a long time to think about things and just kind of prepare myself. I actually had a letter written up just in case they weren't there, just kind of like, you know, hey, offering my condolences and just letting them know that I was in the area, you know, if they wanted to meet up or talk, you know, just to put it out there. Because I guess the last thing that I want them to think is that, you know, that I don't care or that I never cared, because I still do.
Yeah.
I always will. I mean, I'm not, I have to know what happened to him. I mean, and especially if something bad happened to Barry, and especially if his family is still suffering because of it, the last thing that I want them to feel is that their life is completely destroyed and there's no way of at least trying to fix it. I mean, and I don't know, man. It was rough going up to his house even before I could even see it, you know, because I didn't know what to expect. You know, was his family going to be there? Were they going to be gone? You know, what was going to be there? So I pulled up. And it was funny because I don't want to say ironically, but it was oddly enough, it was Easter Sunday when I wound up driving out there, and that was pretty much my only window to do it. And I was pulling up, and I saw all these cars, like, parked, like, in the neighborhood pulling up, and I was like, man, they're probably going to be home. You know, they're probably going to be in the middle of Easter, and I was like, maybe I really shouldn't, you know, if they're, like, trying to enjoy their Easter and they're doing their family thing, you know, maybe I shouldn't drop in on them. And I pull up to the house, and it's clearly empty. There's a Century 21 sign on the front lawn. The Jennings family sign is still in the mailbox, but when you open up the mailbox, there's a little red card in there from the post office that says this residence is vacant. You go up to the front door. The front door is completely padlocked. So, I left my letter there just to leave it. I wrote it and I brought it all the way there. I figured just leave it there. If by some means it gets to them, you know, at least I tried. Again, like
You left a letter on the door. Do you want to just share very, very quickly, you know, maybe some of the contents of that letter? It's up to you.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, pretty much just offering my condolences, telling them who I was, that I was the one that interviewed him mid-2007, and that I was in the area. If they wanted to meet up and chat, or, you know, just, you know, or say whatever they wanted to say to me, really. I mean, if they wanted to meet up and tell me that, you know, if they wanted to meet up and tell me I'm the worst person in the world and that I completely destroyed their life, then, you know, that's what I had to deal with. You know, the letter was pretty much just putting myself out there. Like, first and foremost, deepest condolences, and second, also, you know, asking them, you know, or like, you know, not like asking them, but like just letting them know that I've been trying to figure out what happened to Barry. And that actually leads me, well, first, before I wrap up that, or before I carry on, I don't want to wrap up. So I drop my letter at the house and then I drive away. It was creepy. I mean, yeah, it was really creepy, man. It was such a weird feeling, like, to be at his house, and like it was kind of that feeling, like, you know, if only I could have done this earlier, like if only I could have had a car in New York and I could have communicated, because I didn't want to call them. I didn't want to call their house when I first figured out that he passed away, because I figured there were enough people that were harassing them. But regardless, that leads me to my next point, which actually happened about a month or so ago. I had a friend hire a private investigator, one of the best ones in New York State. Gave her, you know, Barry's name, age, his address, And we were like, we're simply trying to find information on what happened to this individual. There is nothing in the public record, and we're simply, you know, we know he was 53 when he died. We know the date that he died, but that's all we know. And I think it was no less than 24 hours later that my friend got a response back, and pretty much word for word, due to some of the information I have uncovered, I have determined that this is a job for the police. I have refunded your credit card. Please do not contact me ever again about this individual. Now, when a man passes away innocently in a hospital, I don't think that it's that big of a deal for a private investigator to disclose that kind of information.
Well, first of all, I mean, a private investigator is there to, you know, make the paycheck and to satisfy the customer like anybody else running a business. That's really odd, and that's a huge red flag.
Sum of money too, you know, we're not talking like, hey, you know, here's $50, can you look into this? I mean, it was definitely a sum that wouldn't be turned down unless there was something at stake. So that was very spooky to get that back from her. And the second private investigator that we heard back from, I haven't actually seen this email, but, you know, I saw the other one, so therefore I can take the information on the second one in confidence that, from what I gather, his death certificate apparently wasn't even filled out properly. And again, I don't know the full specifics. And again, the people listening to this can gladly call it bull. You know, they can call it whatever they want. I have no reason to lie. I have no reason to be making up any of this. I just need to get the information out there, and I need people to know what.
But Dylan, that's highly unusual. Again, these people are making a paycheck. They're there to satisfy their customers. Give the appropriate information, whatever they find, and I challenge anyone in my audience to go out and hire a private investigator and have them say, hey, this is a police matter, here's all your money back, don't ever call me again. That seems like a huge red flag. I don't know how much more we know, but have we been able to go back to the private investigator and ask him why, you know, he was so freaked out about this and why, you know, he's so willing to just refund the money and turn this over to the police? And then, of course, what, if anything, will the police actually do in New York?
Well, that's going to be my next step, is contacting the police, because actually, when I was driving away, I saw a neighbor going into their house, and I didn't want to go door to door, but I did see someone walking in, so I figured I'd take the opportunity. And she actually didn't live there. She was just bringing flowers in to the family. But I eventually, after like two or three people, I eventually made my way to the owner of the household. And he came out and he was like, oh, Jennings? I mean, yeah, I remember seeing the kid playing out front a lot, but I don't really remember the father. And I was like, yeah, you know, and I told him, you know, I was like, yeah, you know, he passed away last August. This is all the information I have. And then I told him that line from the investigator, and, you know, they were like, well, that's a weird thing to say. Yeah, I know. They're like, yeah, unfortunately, I can't really tell you much. All I can, but now that you bring it up, I do remember, you know, the moving van last fall. So, I mean, that implies to me that, you know, after Barry passed away, they packed up and moved, which, again, I can't say I blame them one bit.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much.
Yeah, but Dylan, look, I mean, we look at a guy like Willie Rodriguez, who was decorated by the president for his heroism in 9/11 and then just discarded as if he never was there. We look at a guy like Barry Jennings, who literally could have been considered one of those heroes. He was there on the scene, and he is bypassing the internal investigations, the 9/11 whitewash commission, whatever you want to call it, and talking, you know, to the alternative press. He gives us a view of that reality we've never seen before. He dies shortly thereafter, in fact, exactly when the BBC whitewash was put forward, literally dies just after that. His family moves out immediately. You put a private investigator on the case. He doesn't want to take your money, refers the matter to police, and says, don't ever call me again. I'm sorry, but if I'm looking at this from an objective point of view, I think something really stinks here, and I think, you know, I'd like to think that all of my listeners and anyone out there who is passionate about what really happened on 9/11 will really want to get to the bottom of this, and this is just intriguing enough that we should go another step.
Yeah, for sure, man, and I guess that's where I'm at now. So as far as I can tell, I covered everything. And I guess my main concern, you know, in doing this is just kind of getting the information out there, and, you know, as weird as this might sound, just kind of, you know, guaranteeing certain things, you know. because it's just messed up, man. I mean, it's the best way to put it. You know,
Well, wouldn't it be easy to just forget about it? We got him on tape. He's a witness, and that's good enough. And whatever happened to him, like so many witnesses to the JFK assassination or 9/11 or anything that happens in history like this. And the fact that, you know, you are committed to pursuing this and getting closure, not just for us, not just for you, not just for me, not just for everybody out there who needs the truth about 9/11, but for the family and everybody involved. And I think that what we're starting to hear now, and this is what a lot of people were looking for from you guys after, you know, this Barry Jennings death happened, was what did happen? What do we know? And by you adding some of these facts here on the program today, I think, if nothing else, we need to work a little harder to find out what happened to Barry Jennings. Dylan, if it was me, I would want people to go to the ends of the earth to make sure that the truth came out about what happened and how I died.
Yeah, likewise. And I don't want to jinx myself, but yeah, I guess I should just point out that I don't plan on taking my own life anytime soon.
No. All right. Hey, listen, man, I really appreciate you being on the show today. I want you to keep us in the loop. I know a lot of people are really interested in this. I happen to believe this is a major piece of the puzzle. We've got, you know, several pieces. This is one of them. And the fact, and I've always believed this, when somebody expires, when somebody disappears, when somebody is suicided or whatever it is, that makes me all the more curious and all the more passionate to get to the bottom of what is actually happening. So I hope what we've done today is give people just a little bit more information. I know we're not going to have closure on this right now, man, but ultimately we know that something here stinks enough, and I'm willing to be the go-between, whatever we have to do, if we have to raise money, whatever we have to do, to find out what happened to Barry Jennings. And again, if I'm his family and if I'm the late Barry Jennings, I want the same thing done for me. I want the same thing done for me that all of the first responders who passed away on 9/11 would want done for them. That's really our job. And here we are now almost 10 years later, and we still really don't know everything that happened. And that is a travesty in this day and age. In the information age, I don't think there's any doubt that we're eventually going to find the truth.
Yeah, I can only hope so, man. And I think that 2009 could potentially be a very good year for 9/11 truth. And, you know, it's only April, and, you know, I think that there's a lot more surprises coming down.
Yeah.
And, again, I do want to take this final opportunity to make sure that the last thing I say is that, you know, I have nothing but condolences and, you know, offer whatever I can to the Jennings family, whether or not they end up listening to this or they end up hearing about it through someone else. All I ever want them to know, you know, is that the only thing that I ever held in terms of what was important with Barry was his safety and the safety of his family. And I tried my damnedest to try and preserve that. And, you know, I really guess that's all I can say. I don't want.
Well, we've talked about this on the show before, Dylan. I mean, there is a fine line here between getting to the truth and putting people in danger, and that's really the job that we have to do. And I hope that my listeners in America and the world at large really understands, you know, what we're up against here, and that people do give their lives so that we can understand what is going on in the world, and if necessary, we can understand what false flag terrorism is, how it's used. And obviously, there's nothing more important that we should know today that 9/11 was an inside job. If it was, we need to know that, because I believe we're on the brink of 9/12. So this interview dedicated to Barry Jennings and his family. And if there's any possibility that we can find the truth, we're going to find the truth. And I want to put this call out to anybody who can help us do that. Write me at jackblood@hotmail.com or write to Dylan Avery and let us know if you have any tips. And let's continue. Let's stay on this story, and let's, you know, really justify the great life that the public service that Barry Jennings led. This is something, Dylan, that we hear from all these politicians. They're here to help us, and they're living this life of public service. Barry Jennings was a guy who really did that, and his life meant something. And as long as I'm around, and I know as long as you're around, we're going to get to the bottom of this, and we're going to tell people whatever it is that we can find. So I really appreciate you sharing this information, and I want to let my listeners know that anything else we find out, you can hear it on this show, or you can look up Dylan Avery, Loose Change, and please stay tuned to this. These people have given their lives for what we do every day.
Yeah, for sure, man. I wish it didn't have to be like that with Barry. You know, I always hoped that it wasn't going to end like that. So I'm hoping that, like you said, I hope we can figure out what happened, and I hope that his family can be helped out in any way possible, you know, or maybe they just want to disappear, you know, maybe that's it. I mean, maybe they just want to disappear and never want to hear about it again. But at the very least, I need to at least know exactly what happened. Because, you know, I knew him, you know, I knew the man. I got to meet him, you know, I got to sit in his office and watch him eat his lunch, and we got to talk for a while, you know. It's like, I didn't just grab him and put a camera in his face and that was the end of that, you know. And like, I checked up on him. Like, I was always concerned about Barry, and I was always trying to make sure that everything was okay with him. We did what we had to do, but we also tried to make sure that he was okay and as safe as possible. And I don't know, if I had the money to put him in witness protection, that's what I would have done in the first place.
Well, and that's what he needed. And, you know, maybe our listeners need to call up Michael Bloomberg and ask what happened, or Rudy Giuliani, or one of these people. Hey, what happened to your honorable employee? What happened to this man that was so dedicated to public service and spoke the truth? You can't just forget about him, because we haven't. Dylan, I really appreciate you being on the show today. You keep us in the loop, okay? And let us know what you find out here. I know there's a lot of things you can't talk about, and we want to keep this investigation going. So this is a great update, and I think this is really going to help people really, you know, get to where they need to be about the witnesses to 9/11 truth. And like so many things like this that have happened, the best people are the ones that are sacrificed in order to cover up the lies.
Yeah, that's the one way of putting it.
Dylan Avery, folks. Dylan Avery, Loose Change. Dylan Avery. Dylan, thanks again for being on the show. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
Yeah, for sure, Jack. Thanks for having me on. Let me do this.